Kia ora, hello, and welcome to Bod Almighty, the practical how-to podcast helping you feel better about your body, have a peaceful relationship with food, and go out into the world with confidence. Everywhere we turn these days, someone is telling us to love your body. But how?
Well, by listening to this podcast is how.
That's right. We are your hosts, Hannah Tunnicliffe
and Michelle Sokolich. Without further ado, let's get started.
Barb Puzanovova is a first-generation Czech American who owns and runs her business, The Non-Diet Trainer, from her home base in Nashville, Tennessee. Through personal training and the Joyful Movement Program, which is a signature virtual group program designed to repair your relationship with movement, Barb encourages others to move with less rules and more joy. We love that, don't we?
Oh, so good.
Without the focus on weight, she hopes her clients can get the brain space they need to heal themselves and dismantle systems of oppression. That's an extra bonus. With her undergraduate degree in community health, Barb knows that individuals and individual behaviors do not exist in a vacuum, but are impacted by society, cultural norms, prejudices, oppression, and trauma. And she also brings to her work her own experience of recovery from an eating disorder. Barb is an ACE-certified personal group trainer, a behavior change specialist, and a certified intuitive eating counselor. She is all about prioritizing actions over aesthetics, and we are so happy to have her.
Welcome along.
And I'm so happy to be here. Hooray!
Barb, we're talking with you about how to get moving again. So, you know, people that maybe have either, you know, never done a lot of movement, or maybe they have and they've stopped for whatever reasons. COVID and lockdowns has been really disruptive for people as well. So, yeah, I wonder if you could tell me what in your experience stops people getting back into it, you know, once they feel they've fallen off the horse or stopped in some way.
The concept of the fact that there is some sort of horse to fall off of.
Yes.
Fall off of. I think yes. That is where a lot of us need to start. And unfortunately, we're taught that. We're taught that there is a wagon that you should be on. You should be on it for life. And the wagon should go faster and stronger and harder all of the time, right? And how dare it slow down, or how dare you take a stop for a moment? I mean, if I think of any train, it's not like a lightning speed train. It's probably like a train, since I'm from the Czech Republic, or my family is, I've been on plenty of trains, at least there. The US doesn't believe in public transportation, but when I've been on trains there, it usually goes fairly slow and steady, and it stops in every little village and town. Yes. And like, you don't necessarily go at 100 miles an hour. So that's my experience with like what I think of being on the train, so to speak. But I think a lot of us have this conception, have been taught this idea that we should be going as fast as possible. And if we happen to fall off because it's so goddamn fast, then it's our fault. Somehow we have failed, you know, incredibly. And
it's all or nothing, isn't it?
Yeah, that it's like, it's all a personal failure. And sure, there are, you know, times when I have to make a choice, like during 2020, 100%, my, you know, I'm going to say like workout routine or movement practice did take a back seat. It did take a lower priority, because then other things had to take further priority up the list. So I would always say, like, you have to kind of step back and think, okay, I'm going to ask myself, what do I think is what my movement routine should look like? What am I kind of putting as this idea of where I should get back to, and start there?
So Michelle mentioned there around all or nothing thinking, and I'd really like to dive into that. The unhelpful metaphor, the unhelpful way of thinking about exercise. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah. So this all or nothing thinking, I think, really stems from a lot of the rules that we get taught of, like, and they're usually phrased as guidelines, recommendations, or simply, if you want to optimize your health, if you want to be, you know, your healthiest, best self, then here's what you need to do. I think sometimes these rules can be very sneaky because they're not necessarily told as like, here are the five rules. Sometimes they are, though. I see them floating around Instagram for sure. Like, here's what you need to do, X, Y, and Z, list 1 through 10. And that's a really easy way to get into all or nothing thinking. I definitely find myself there so much because our brains just want something that's predictable and safe. And when it's predictable, it's safe. And so I don't blame our brains for wanting to check off the boxes, right? Like, that makes sense. It feels really good to check off a box.
Gives you a feeling of control as well, doesn't it? Like, oh yes, I'm doing that.
I'm doing it. And when life feels out of control, it makes sense that you want some control. And I'm very familiar with that. It's what my eating disorder basically thrived on for years of like, ooh, life is changing around me and I'm not really sure how to adjust for that. And ooh, let's just like control our food intake. Let's control our workout routine. Let's control the way that my body looks. And that's a really safe place for my brain to be in. And for me to say, you know what, I wonder if I can get a little more curious about this, or if it can look a little more nuanced or messy, or, you know, in the middle between that all or nothing, that can feel a little weird and a little uncomfortable for people. But I like to make it fun because saying, hey, this thing is really uncomfortable and unpleasant, how about you practice that, is not super motivating. So I like to think about, we're all very familiar with snacks and meals. And so I like to think about introducing the idea of like a movement snack, that maybe you don't have to talk about movement in terms of like workouts and exercise, because that tends to bring up this really like intensity, you know, you're sweaty, you're working really hard, not demonizing necessarily exercise or working out or working hard, but knowing that that doesn't have to be the full extent and the only way that we experience movement. And so, you know, introducing this idea of movement meals or snacks, one, I just think it's funny. And two, I think it also brings this idea that movement can be nourishing, just like you're not going to hopefully, I mean, I say this in the light of intermittent fasting, but hopefully you don't eat once a day, one huge meal and call it good. I'm pretty sure if I personally would do that, my energy levels would be completely out of whack. I would feel very hungry and then very full and nothing in between. And so what a movement snack can look like is you're probably already taking them to some extent. First of all, if I have a long day, let's say I'm working on my computer or something like that, then I showed you all my dog laying next to me as we speak. And I might take her for a little walk around the block, or I like take a moment to just like play with her for 5 minutes. And that's my movement meal or movement snack that I just get to like step away for a little bit, feed myself, nourish myself. Typically my energy and my mood and all that stuff tends to like bump up a little bit. So I feel those effects right away, which is way more interesting than waiting around for some long-term, you know, aesthetic thing to happen with my body. I know it's totally a joke on Reels or on TikTok where it's like, I did one workout and ate one salad and nothing has changed. And it's like, yeah, that's really boring.
Yeah.
Very much not motivating to think about it.
As an all or nothing person myself.
Confession time.
Yeah. It's very tempting for me personally to be like, oh, well, that's not worth it.
It doesn't count.
Yeah. Like how do you get around that when you sort of have that feeling of like, oh, why, you know, 5 minute walk, what's that going to do?
Interesting. So I would always ask, you know, what would make it worth it and why? Because when we really ask ourselves, when I would ask myself, when I'm thinking like, is this worth it? Am I hoping for some result at the end? Is this the thing? You know, am I looking to build towards this long-term goal of weight loss, of changing my body, of burning enough calories, whatever that has been defined for us throughout the years, whatever it might be. But again, if I think about, well, was it worth it to step away for 5 minutes to play with my dog? Fuck yeah, it was.
Oh, I love that reframe. That's fantastic. Yeah.
So what new rewards can people consider So you've talked about aesthetics and weight loss and things, and that tends to be a major focus for people. I'm doing this, even though they might say health, often simmering underneath is this, you know, intense fear of becoming bigger, what being bigger means in society. So what kinds of rewards could people consider for a movement snack?
I really like something that feels immediate, because I love, I mean, I don't love the term brain hacking or something like that. I'm not trying to trick my brain, but I think we're all wired to actually like things that are pleasurable and do things that feel good and not want to do things that feel bad. And I know there's a ton of nuance, like budgeting doesn't feel good or interesting, but sure, it's good for my long-term, you know, financial health, blah, blah, blah. But here I really like, if you are in that state of, I feel really stuck between that all or nothing thinking, and I just don't know a way forward, go towards what actually feels good. And I like that you mentioned, like, what are the other carrots that we can use? Mm. And for me, it's definitely like mood. If I'm angry, it feels really nice to move in certain ways where I can kind of like get my anger out or my stress out or my sadness. I can be with my sadness or create some space for joy too. Like, understanding that I can be in a really chaotic world and still create space to, again, do something as joyful and simple as play with my dog or something like that, or go outside and like really be present with the fact that it's a really nice day outside, or today it's like, it's kind of a dreary day, but I love it. It's a cozy kind of day, and just being kind of aware of sensations is really nice. That's a typical, like, you know, recommendation for people going through anxiety is to ground yourself in your five senses. So in the experience of movement, can you then, you know, whatever that movement practice is, it could be lifting weights, it could be taking a walk, it could be stretching, but just seeing like, okay, well, what do I see? What do I feel? And that could be internal in your body, or it could be like the feel of the mat on my hands, or the feel of the weight, you know, in my hands or on my back or something like that. The sounds that I'm hearing, maybe you're somebody that works out. I usually work out with like a podcast on these days. But maybe you're hearing music, maybe you're hearing, you know, your kids in the background or something. And then going through like smells, tastes as well, that can be nice. So there are times where if I have a client and we're just having like a higher stress or anxiety day, I'll be like, cool, like light a candle, light something that smells good, so you can also have that sense in there. So just having more kind of pleasurable five senses experiences during your movement practice can be also another way to quickly get that carrot. And honestly, there's other things like improved sleep. There's like, you know, even improved like libido. My libido has tanked over the past 2 years, and just being like, oh, I'm like reconnecting with my body, even though my body is different. And I'm just kind of like, just getting to know her again. And that has been really interesting. Yeah, I feel like I typically don't go to the classic list of like, your cardiovascular health is better and like blah, blah, blah. Cause like, that doesn't mean anything to me emotionally.
How am I going to feel different? Yeah.
Exactly. Like, it might be, okay, well, going up and down the stairs is less intense, and that's cool for sure. But for me personally, that doesn't connect all that much. I don't like, or for example, I know that weightlifting decreases my risk for osteoporosis because they increase bone density. Does that mean anything to me emotionally? Probably not. It's cool to know in the back of my head. But I typically try not to have carrots that are kind of fear-based, in the sense of like, I'm decreasing my risk for diabetes or something. It's like, well, I mean, is that really like an interesting or like joyful reason to move?
Or immediate, like you said, right? Yeah. Like immediate rewards are way more powerful.
Like in front of your face immediate, not just like, oh, short-term results within the next few weeks, you'll start to see. It's like, no, I want to feel what it feels like in the next 5 minutes of that improvement immediately. And so that's what I usually think about. It's like, what can be the biggest carrot for you in the moment? For sure. Like, is it alone time away from your children? I don't know.
Yes. Big motivator. Yeah.
I love this, because we had spoken, Barb, about being your own researcher, and for people to consider when they are engaging in movement, that they are collecting data. So instead of judging it, you're being curious about it. Can you talk to us about that?
So this is a concept I totally did not come up with. And I know a lot of kind of health at every size folks. I know that a friend of mine, Jamie Carbaugh at Fit Ragamuffin, just mentioned it recently. And we were just talking about it together the other day, because I feel like so much of the time, this almost like external validation, again, going back to like finding out what rules, like what things to follow, what boxes to check. We want somebody else to just give us that. We want somebody to just be like, here you go. Here's your roadmap to perfect health. You'll never get sick. You'll never age. You'll never die. Like what? It's all just wrapped up in it.
Especially if you've been out of touch with your own body and listening to your own body signals for a long time, it can be hard to know.
Yes, exactly. And so when we do that, then we actually don't have a capacity to actually evaluate, kind of bring it back to the five senses of like, what does my body feel like as we're doing this? And it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, sometimes people are like, oh, that's really touchy-feely. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm just observing. Just like a scientist would observe something that's happening. Like I used to do like lab experiments, checking out a petri dish and just looking through like, oh, what's happening in this petri dish? And instead we're just kind of looking through our body and scanning like, okay, what's happening right now? If I have a client that I'm working with, let's say we're doing something like a squat, they might sometimes ask like, well, you know, what should this feel like? Or, you know, this feels such and such way. Or they might answer like, oh, I think I feel it here. And it's really cool for me to have that conversation with them, because I get to ask them like, what do you observe in your body? Because right now I'm seeing visually, you know, this is happening with your knees, this is happening with your back, maybe try to, you know, change this, or this is what it visually looks like, your form, right? That's what we talk about with form. But then also the other piece is your own observation of what's happening within you at the same time. So like, oh, I feel some like muscular like contraction or some like warmth happening in my thighs, or I also feel some tension happening in my low back. It kind of feels like it's in this general area, and then it's like starting to increase the longer we do squats. And that's all really important information as we kind of gather that data. And that's obviously like just data within just one movement pattern, but we can also gather data like across a span of time of just, let's say, I'm here and I have this expectation of I'm going to work out every single day and I'm going to do this kind of workout for this long. And I actually remember doing this with walking at some point. I think I was like, oh, the recommendation is like 30 minutes a day or something like that. Right. And so I observed myself as I went through the week, what days I quote unquote, you know, succeeded with that. I did take my 30 minute walk, and some days that I didn't, and some days where I maybe did a shorter walk or did something totally different. And so all of those are actually data points. It's not just I succeeded in the walk or I didn't. It's I did the 30 minute walk, and then all these other options that I actually had along the way of, I didn't do the walk at all, I didn't do the walk and I did something else, I did a shorter walk. Like there's so many options within that. And so I think it's really cool to, yeah, define your parameters, just like a scientist maybe would, and say like, this is my intention, and then see what happens, instead of saying, oh, well, I planned this thing and then this other thing happened. Well, that must mean something absolutely terrible about me. I'm a failure. I'm lazy. I'm out of shape. I'm too old. Like all these other things that start to come up. And those are just judgments. That's just our brain trying to make sense of a pattern that it's seeing. Because again, brains are just like any other organ. I know we think very highly of them, but our heart pumps, you know, blood, and then our brains think and make judgments and patterns and all that stuff. So it's definitely like, okay, I need to kind of check myself and see if I'm just observing or if I'm judging.
And what I like about that is that, you know, there's a misconception that the opposite of shame, because we're talking a lot about guilt and shame, and the opposite of shame is confidence and boldness and expertise and all of this kind of stuff. But actually, a lot of researchers, including Brené Brown, will talk about how curiosity is the antidote to shame, that actually curiosity will help disintegrate that shame. And so that's exactly what you're suggesting. And also I'm thinking not just about being in the moment of the movement and considering sensations and experiences in that moment. But what about for listeners considering their motivations? Like what you, you know, you spoke about that, like when clients come to you and say, I want to do this, or I want this to be my end goal. Like, how do you work with them on those things?
That's a good question. I think that's changed over the years for me. I think in the past, I would have wanted to go kind of deeper into that motivation. And sometimes that's appropriate to kind of dive into like, well, why do you want to run a 5K? Like, what's the meaning behind that? And sometimes that can be really helpful. And sometimes it's also possibly helpful to just let them go after it. Maybe they end up doing it, maybe they don't. And then we reevaluate it again. Because sometimes I think we get something totally different out of the experience that we may not have imagined. So if somebody says, hey, I want to train for a 5K or I want to get stronger, they might not totally know what their motivation is. Or they might just be like, I just want to see and try it and, you know, see what happens at the end. Mm-hmm. And you might reach that goal and say, oh, that's not what I thought that it was going to be. Or that's exactly what I thought it was going to be, for better or for worse, right?
So in a way, you just need to, once you've collected all that data, maybe if you're kind of feeling a bit stuck or something, what you actually need to do is just begin and try something and do it.
Yeah, continuing that like science experiment. I mean, we always kind of want to bring about some sort of hypothesis. So if my hypothesis is running a 5K will make me a fitter person, or like training for a 5K is going to make me a fitter or even happier, healthier person, let's say that, then I can collect the data as I'm like training for the thing. And then at the end, I make my observations. I see, okay, well, did it make me a fitter, a happier, healthier person, or more confident or whatever? And then I get to make a conclusion based on that data. Like I get to be like, did it? And maybe the answer is yes. I think I don't want to like rain on anyone's parade. There are plenty of people that really enjoy running and it's brought them a lot of joy, and plenty of people who are like, oh, I don't like this. This actually hasn't made me a happier person. And I give you full permission to not train for a 5K.
But you don't know. You don't know until you've tried sometimes.
For sure. And sometimes you also just know without trying.
Yeah, like, yes.
Sometimes if I say like, hey, I want to, you know, someone's like, I want to jump out of a airplane and go skydiving, I'll be like, I'm good. I actually have been.
Same. I will never skydive.
Just there are some things that you just know, or you'll be like, you know what, for time being, that's a really hard pass for me. And for some people, running is like that. It's like, this is a hard pass for me. I don't need to go through a whole experiment to figure out whether I like it or not. I just know right now that's a no.
I thought it was would be a cool exercise for listeners to think about what you framed as red, orange, and green light movements. Mm. So for some people, running might be a red, right? So can you talk to us about how people can use that kind of framework to think about the types of movements that might be more appealing?
Yeah, so I love that segue into it, because that's a really nice way to, even if you're not a big journaler, I certainly am not, but just to kind of write on top of a page, say like, this is red, this is yellow, this is green, just like, you know, stoplights at a, you know, whatever it's called. And, you know, green is stuff that you know just right from looking at it, just like when you're driving, you just look at the green, you're like, all right, we're going through. Those are the movements that you just know that you feel comfortable doing. I also like to kind of have some nuance there, that it doesn't have to like be all butterflies and rainbows and it's like joyful and you're in ecstasy, you know, about this movement. But you feel comfortable doing it. It feels relatively safe. It feels even tolerable. I talk to a lot of friends, you know, who have like mental illness, chronic pain. And sometimes it's like, yeah, let's say like a walk or stretching doesn't feel like super exciting. Your brain might tell you to do everything but that, but it feels tolerable to do it. It feels accessible. So that would be in like my green light kind of bucket. And then for yellow light, those might be either things that are a little bit challenging, a little bit out of the quote unquote comfort zone. And those are cool to have. It could also be things that you're curious about, you've never tried them before, or it's been a long time since you've done them. For me, that's like horseback riding. Have not done that in a long time, but I'd be curious to try again.
Get back on the horse. That was a good circle round. Get back on the horse, Bob.
That's a red. And that's our yellow. Like, I'm not maybe going to try those activities or movements on days when I'm feeling particularly stressed or just like, you know, my own cup is not very full that day. Like, I'm just not feeling it. Probably not going to go to the yellow ones.
Fun fact here, different parts of the world call that orange in New Zealand, and other places call it yellow. I just read that the other day. So interesting. Okay. No, keep going with your yellow though, because it's, yeah. Okay.
You're going to always edit that out.
I love that you mentioned to me too that, like, to build confidence, right? So I've had a big break from exercise. I've been in lockdown and now I'm like trying to work through sort of guilt and shame stuff, but I'm like, right, I'm just going to try something. Better to try the green light options to build up to the orange / yellow and red. Is that a good approach?
I really like that approach because I think a lot of times, I mean, I will feel that anxiety too. Even though movement is my work and movement is like something I know that I generally enjoy doing, if it's been a long time since I've done a particular movement, or if I've like just been just doing other things and prioritizing other things, it does feel like a bit nerve-wracking. It feels like you're going back on stage or something like that. To me, the stage is not totally my friend at all times, so just FYI, if somebody's like, oh my god, I love the stage, it's a green light for me. Stage is definitely like a yellow for me. So if I'm diving into something like that, I definitely want to start in my comfort zone. I think that's a lot of what we'll hear in fitness is like, step out of your comfort zone, you'll never grow if you, you know, or stay in your comfort zone forever. And I'm like, but the comfort zone is where our nervous systems are regulated. That's actually a really, really great thing for us to feel like, oh, this isn't just constantly like scaring the shit out of me. It actually feels pretty good. I understand, like, I am very comfortable here in bed with my pup like leaning into me right now. But also I know that, you know, doing something like a walk, not going to like completely throw me off. It's not going to be some like gargantuan effort to commit to like a 5-minute walk or just like listen to a song while I walk and then just head back again. So
I love how that for me, that sort of that red, orange and green light categories also could potentially help with my all or nothing, because I'm the kind of person who's like,
do the red.
Or I could go on a walk, or I could do the Oxfam Trail Walker, which is 3 days, you know, like I'm always like, oh, and maybe for me, I'm thinking that could be like a red that I do occasionally, which is nice. But then actually, if I've got this list of green that's more accessible, that feels like a good way to me to kind of just keep, you know, keep that tempered. Yeah, which is really helpful.
Yeah, Michelle recently is doing something that's going to help improve her sleep.
Oh, yes.
And the person said to her, you know, you won't know yourself. You'll have so much energy. And I was like, could we not?
Uh-oh.
I'm quite scared about that version of Michelle. If right now is just, you know, is subpar, then like optimal Michelle is terrifying.
I'm going to be ringing my friends and they're like, don't answer. She'll make you mountain hike.
Yeah, it's that Oxfam thing again.
Yes. I think it's cool to have those, you know, like I can also tap into that, like, you know, extra challenging thing. And every now and then, like, again, I haven't tapped into that for 2 years because, hello, I don't have the capacity for that. I just started a business. I have completely changed how I do work and life. Not to mention all of the stresses that have been happening. Like, it totally makes sense that I have not wanted to tap into that super challenging thing. Some people, however, when they're going under stress, they're like, fuck it, I'm going to choose what kind of stress I go through. And sometimes that can feel really nice too, of like, but I am choosing this stressful thing, this challenging thing.
That's control as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, going back to control. And so again, I have like a lot of compassion for Anyone that as soon, I remember, you know, March 2020, when things closed down, they're like, I'm buying a barbell, a kettlebell. I'm going to have a home gym. Let's go, go, go. I'm going to transform my entire life. And I'm like, you know what? That's a fair response. Not everyone has that response. So I don't think it's fair to then say, well, these people are being lazy because they're not having the same trauma response as me.
It's not right or wrong.
There's no right or wrong on that necessarily. Like, we can debate that, but for me, it's like, yeah, that's fair. You're just managing the best you can, just like the person who's taking extra time in their bed is managing the best they fucking can. I like that green, yellow, red, if you're like one of those people who's like, well, I've been in bed and now what? Like, that doesn't feel good to me anymore. So where do I go from there? And I'm not one of those people that wants to take on a challenge in high amounts of stress. Like, I'm that person that wants to take a nap if I'm overwhelmed. So I very much relate to that.
I wonder if we could end on talking about, you mentioned being compassionate about the real, very real barriers to movement. And I think it might be helpful for people. I feel like you, Barb, have your compassion has perhaps been developed in the work that you do, that you see so many different types of people and you've been able to appreciate, yeah, for some people walking is A, uncomfortable, or B, unsafe. They've been conditioned to realize it's unsafe. So how can people learn from what you've learned to bring more compassion to themselves in this? I think people sometimes have the misconception that if they give themselves compassion for why they had, let's say I planned to do a workout and I didn't do it, and having compassion for that, they think, oh, well, that's dangerous because that'll mean that I'll quote unquote let myself off the hook and I won't do the movement tomorrow either. But actually, compassion, as you've just demonstrated, can actually in the long run kind of get you closer to your goals than actually distract you from them.
Absolutely.
Or change them or make you understand what support you need.
I completely agree that so much of us shy away from compassion because we feel like it's going to be weak. It's going to not challenge us enough. And that we need that sort of tough love. It's like, no. And that's ultimately why I feel like compassion is like one of the most radical things that you can do for yourself.
And I find it's helpful to think like, you imagine if you were talking to a friend, you know, would you get a better result yelling at them and telling them they're useless or being compassionate? So, you know, do that for yourself as well.
I get more done, or at least more meaningfully done with love than with hate, for sure.
Yes.
I mean, hate burns me out. I can get a lot done with hating myself and with fear, but I burn out very quickly on it. I think that's the other thing, is that sometimes people are like, yeah, but I get so much done when somebody yells at me and keeps me accountable and tough love and all that. But I also want to say, well, how sustainable is that? Like, do you just want to do that for like decades? Like, is that how you want to be in like 30 years and still have somebody, whether it's you or a coach or a friend or an accountability partner, just like yelling at you for 3 decades? That doesn't sound fun.
Passion sounds much better. I love it. Thank you so much, Barb. Where can people find you if they want to find out more about you and what you do?
Probably one of two places. Instagram is a great one, @nondiet_trainer, or my website, thenondiettrainer.com.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Barb. You have been listening to Bod Almighty,
the podcast that gives you practical how-to steps towards body acceptance and confidence.
You can find us on Instagram @BodAlmightyPodcast.
Please do get in touch to let us know if you have any questions or suggestions. We love to hear from you.
From both of us, thank you and goodbye.